No, thank you, Sleepy. You come back in an hour.
Need Sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
We're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri. It's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning to everybody. A special shout out to all of our viewers on Fight TV. And don't forget, if you don't get Fight TV on your TV dial, just get it on your handheld. It's real simple. Just go to Fight, that's F-I-T-E, that's fight.tv/Billy C. Download the app for free and watch our show along with some other great combat sports on Fight TV. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria, an Italian restaurant located in beautiful St. Simons Island, Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, or give my man a call, 912-268-2328, 912-268-2328. And don't forget, if you're heading south on I-95, stop off at Sal's. It's literally a 15-minute detour right off of the interstate, and trust me, you won't regret it. Mention the show and get a free cannoli with your meal. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Molino, From Bondage to Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. And you can literally get a copy of it right now by visiting Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. And if you're looking to get a signed copy, don't worry about it. Just visit our website, www.BillyCBoxing.com, and click on the book club section. And finally, if you like the fantasy sports games, well, there's a new one out, and we're hooking you up big time. Go to firefan.com/BillyCBoxing and get the game for free. And here's the best part. If you go to firefan.com/BillyCBoxing, best thing to do too, just go to our website, BillyCBoxing.com, and click on the Fire Fan banner. I mean, it's that simple. Our code is BillyCBoxing, and you can get the game for free, play it for free, but the best part is win money, and it's a little different than other fantasy games. Go check it out and see what I'm talking about, firefan.com/BillyCBoxing, or just use the code BillyCBoxing, whatever. Just go to our website and click the banner. It's the easiest thing. Coming up a little bit, we got Dax Khan going to join us. We want to give you a lowdown on some final thoughts on the fights from this past weekend. We did our post-fight show, Leo Santa Cruz against Carl Frampton. Leo Santa Cruz regains his title, setting up a third fight. Both fighters said they want it. Both fighters said they're going to give it. Let's just see when we get it. It should be their next fight. Also, we're going to talk about the brutal card on HBO, and I think HBO has really taken a step in that direction, bringing really entertaining, high-impact, no pun intended, fights for us. Manny Pacquiao looks like he will be fighting in Australia against Jeff Horn. We'll give you an update on that. I got some emails to read. We had a domestic battle in Canada. And Brandon Cook, a guy that's been on this show, and actually I got to call some of his early fights, beat Stephen Butler. It was a great fight, great stoppage, but the fans just got crazy afterwards. And I don't know if you've seen the footage. We'll talk about it a little bit. But I just wonder what happened to the security. I mean, it just seemed like these guys were just allowed to go crazy. And finally, my topic today, one of the main topics, is Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather said on the broadcast that his most likely opponent for his 50th win will be against Conor McGregor from the MMA UFC League. My thoughts on this, first of all, they have to iron out the details. I didn't think that this fight would ever happen, but here's where I'm stuck. They're all talking about Mayweather's 50th win. Now, I don't have a problem with Floyd fighting Conor McGregor. As a matter of fact, I would like to see it. But what I don't want to see is Floyd getting credit for his 50th win against Conor McGregor. The reason being is Conor McGregor has never fought professionally as a boxer. This is a guy that's an MMA fighter fighting in the UFC. And let's be real, Floyd Mayweather, whether you like him or not, is regarded as one of the best defensive fighters. I personally think he's a runner. But the truth of the matter is the guy's been fighting boxing, pure boxing, for, you know, a quarter of a century. And to give him the record, so to speak, 50th win against a pro debut, I don't care how good and successful Conor McGregor is in the UFC, this guy should have to fight several fights, at least five, I would think. Even if they're tune-up fights, cupcake fights, he's got to fight at least five before they allow Floyd Mayweather to fight him for his 50th win. I know that he's already licensed in the state of California. This is Conor McGregor. Maybe they'll let him fight with Floyd, but I doubt very much the Nevada State Athletic Commission would allow a pro debut, regardless of his stature in the UFC, to fight Floyd Mayweather, the self-proclaimed best fighter ever, which is complete BS anyway. But Floyd Mayweather getting his 50th win against a pro debut fighter, typical cherry picking for Floyd Mayweather Jr. Joining me right now, Boxing Hall of Famer in New Jersey and Guinness Book of World Record holder, Sal Rocky Senecola. And Sal, what's your thoughts on cherry picker Floyd Mayweather? If he fights Conor McGregor for his 50th win, should it count as his number 50?
Well, you know, there's going to be an asterisk right there for me. I don't see it. I mean, as you pointed out, this would be Conor McGregor's pro debut into professional boxing by the Marquess of Queensberry's rules and everything else. And, you know, this guy is supposedly a great MMA fighter. I'm sorry, I haven't followed him as closely, but I may start looking back at his earlier fights. And, you know, to see what he's got. But, you know, it's a totally different game. And the crossover to fight for a self-proclaimed world's pound-for-pound greatest ever is quite a tall order to make your pro debut against. And I don't see it. I mean, I don't like it. I think, as you said, there should be some pro debuts and against lesser of an opponent for Conor McGregor to see how he fares and what happens with a 3-minute round and 1 minute in between. So, yeah, there's a lot of issues here, and I don't like it. I like the cherry picking. You know, like I said, if there was going to be a fight, I thought that maybe Mayweather and Pacquiao should get together their next fights. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. That's not in the cards right now. And, you know, by the time they're going to maybe eventually do that, it'll lose half the sizzle and the luster that it may be drummed up now. But forget about it.
Well, you know your line, it's the sizzle without the steak. I mean, this fight is a minute steak. It's not even a real friggin' steak,
right?
You know?
I
mean, come on. You know, the funny thing is you know, people talking to me about this potential matchup a couple months ago, even a month or so ago, I laughed. I said, no way. But let me tell you, Floyd Mayweather has started to copy, protect 50-0 and all different ways. Obviously, he's going towards it. And, you know, what's been kind of his M.O. for his career, at least the last 10 years at least for Floyd, is to pick the easiest way to make the most money. Unfortunately, a lot of young fans support this bullshit, so that's why we keep getting it. But I just, you know, to me, it's not real. You know, you can't count. I don't care how successful Conor McGregor is in the UFC, you can't count his first pro boxing match against Floyd Mayweather as a legitimate win for Floyd. I'm sorry, you just can't. Now, if Conor McGregor fights a couple of fights first, fine. And you know, if that's going to take place, Sal, that's going to prolong a matchup for at least a year, you would think. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not happy about it, and I think it's a pussy move by Floyd Mayweather.
Well, that's why I said earlier, and you're exactly right. You know, we anticipated after we saw that initial fight, the fight of the century between Pacquiao and Mayweather, to be maybe a rematch. And I said that night I wouldn't pay for it, but to tell you the truth, that's the only fight that I could see between these two good opponents, or their most likely fight to have is to fight against each other. And, you know, so-called proclaimed shoulder injury by Pacquiao that's now repaired, obviously. And so he should be intact as a whole fighter in the ring. And Mayweather, you know, also saying, hey, you know what, maybe I fought lesser of a Pacquiao that night, and I want to fight him at his best. And his best would have been 5 or 6 years ago, but... right now, you know, I would probably pay for a ticket to see that fight.
Well,
now,
you just said
the outcome. I think. Go ahead.
You hit it on the head. You just basically said it. I mean, I can't. You couldn't have hit the nail on the head any better. You know, Floyd Mayweather, if he was a real man, if he was a legitimate champion, technically, he would want to prove that he could beat Pacquiao, even though I agree with you, it's 5 years too late, but at his best, you know, and as much as I support Floyd for not, you know, I was anti-Manny Pacquiao for making an excuse to begin with, but still, Floyd should say, hey, okay, make sure you're on, you know, and I would be condescending if I was Floyd. You know, I know he's not that smart.
Make sure you get the right
match. Make sure you're okay. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Get in the ring.
Exactly. If I'm Floyd Mayweather, you know, I would act as if I have a brain and say, hey, you know, are you sure you're okay? You sure your shoulder's okay? You know, you sure you're going to be 100%? No excuses this time, Manny. You know, and get in there and fight. You know, but no, instead, he doesn't even want to take a chance against a 100% Pacquiao, which you yourself, Sal, said that you felt that Floyd could beat Pacquiao 100 times if they fought 100 times. So, I think it's a typical pussy move for Floyd Mayweather, and anybody that supports it, it's kind of crazy. Although I would like to see it, it should be a sideshow event, not counting as his 50th win, unless Conor McGregor fights, you know, 4 or 5 fights at least. I mean, go in there with 5 fights.
Exactly. And you know, it's so funny. Just think of the marketing. If Pacquiao and Mayweather were to get together and use their heads and say, hey, let's blow this right out of the water. Let's make this the ultimate, the biggest. I'd have, hey, all right, Pacquiao, we're going to have a disclosure. We're going to have to sign a contract. If there's nothing wrong with you this time, there's nothing wrong with me, we're going to give each other the best. I mean, they could stretch this and make it a fanfare and have press conference after press conference to make this thing really marketable and create the anticipation and the excitement that fans would buy into. And I'd use the key word buy into.
Well, here's the opposite side. Manny Pacquiao continuing his career looks like it's just about signed, sealed, and delivered for him to fight top two ranked Jeff Horn in Australia. Now the deal has been laid out. Horn has signed it, and they even got support from the government to house this fight. 50,000 people minimum would be showing up. Big payday for Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn. You know, you look at Manny Pacquiao, he goes for fighters that are relevant to the sport today. Floyd Mayweather picks, you know, circus acts. And I'm real disappointed in Floyd, because I really think that Floyd, like you say, could beat Manny at this point in time. At Manny's best, but I would like to see it. And I don't want. And if Manny hurts himself again, he's just got to keep his mouth shut. But instead, we're going to see 50th win against a non-boxer. Hey, he might as well fight. Floyd might as well fight me for his 50th win. It's the same difference, you know.
I would go back in the ring. At least I had 5 fights. You
well,
know?
You're at least a former pro. I never fought professionally. You know, I fought amateur, but, you know, hey, 7 amateur fights doesn't count. But I at least have more boxing experience than Conor McGregor. But anyway, let's just recap the big fights this weekend. We did our post-fight show. Leo Santa Cruz regains his WBA featherweight title by beating Carl Frampton in a majority decision. One judge saw this fight even at 114-114, while the other two had it 115-113. You know, I scored the fight 116-112, but I did have rounds 3, 4, and 5, all extremely close. I don't know if you could say it was an even fight, but I, too, believe Santa Cruz eked it out. I know your scorecard, Sal, was a little more in favor of Santa Cruz, but Carl Frampton loses for the first time in his career, 23-1 right now with 14 knockouts. And as far as Leo Santa Cruz, well, he improved to 33-1 with a draw and 18 knockouts. Everybody on the planet wants to see a third fight between these two, a trilogy, if you will. And I just hope that that third fight happens next, Sal. I mean, we got several callers on Saturday night suggesting that they would support a so-called tune-up fight for both so that they could get a win and then fight each other. I say nay, nay. I say it's time to keep it going and fight right now.
That's it. I mean, to get a win, they each had a win against each other. So that's why you get a rubber match. Don't take a chance. Don't spoil the food. Get in the ring while the meat is ready and hot. And I just made that analogy up. Forget about it. Anyway, I think this fight would prove to be a real entertaining fight. And I will tell you, from the surface of seeing what I saw from Carl Frampton in the first fight and the second fight, Leo Santa Cruz from the first fight and the second fight, Leo did his homework, saw what he could do to evolve into a new fighter for this fight. And he had a game plan, he had a plan B. I think that Leo Santa Cruz will beat Carl Frampton in the third rubber match. That's my prediction right off the bat.
Well, like I said Saturday night, I mean, Leo Santa Cruz might have realized that this guy could win fights, you know, make substantial money, beat top fighters if he fought a little smarter. You know, he fought a very intelligent fight, utilized his natural abilities on Saturday night, which generally will, and I think won't just be against Carl Frampton, it'll be against most fighters in this weight class, his height and arm reach advantage. Plus, he can mix it up when he has to. So, I agree with you. If Santa Cruz fights the same way, it's going to be hard for Frampton to get in there. But then again, you know, Frampton's mistake was he wasn't putting more than two or three punches together. I mean, if he went in there and exchanged, you know, I said it Saturday night. We heard it leading up to the fight, Carl Frampton saying how much power he has, how much stronger. He was predicting a knockout, and it looked like that was his game plan, and they never switched. So I think the game plan for Carl Frampton failed him on Saturday night. But in a brutal knockout victory, Mikey Garcia improved to 36 and over 30 knockouts when he knocked out Dejan Lakishian in the co-main event in Vegas on Saturday. Lakishian loses for the first time in his career, 22-1 with 15 knockouts. Mikey Garcia, man, an uppercut followed by a crushing right hand at 2 minutes and 21 seconds of the round number 3 put Lakishian out. And he was laying unconscious for several minutes on the mat, Sal. And when they dragged his motionless body back into the ring, it was pretty sad. It was a concerning moment there.
It surely was. And, you know, it was a devastating, devastating combination, two-punch combination that put Lakishian's lights out for that length of time. I mean, he just torqued the head. He just, with that uppercut, that vicious left uppercut, did a lot of the damage there. And then when he came around with that roundhouse overhand right, just totally knocked him right out. I mean, he was out before he hit the ground.
I think I think he was on his way out after the uppercut, to be honest with you.
Well, he was. He definitely was. That set it up. I mean, you look at that in slow motion with that uppercut, the force and the torque, how it snapped his neck back. He probably, if he didn't come around with that right hand, that uppercut was enough to put him down and hurt him. But he finished it off right there with that right hand. That was devastating. And let me tell you, he didn't even know what hit him. He, like I said, he was out before he even knew what was happening.
Talk about brutal fights. We didn't speak about it on Saturday night, primarily because I focused on the Santa Cruz Carl Frampton fight on Showtime, but over on HBO during the same time, which I thank God to technology, as soon as our show was over, I went and watched it. Oh my goodness, what a brutal couple of fights HBO put on. And it seems to me, as much as the matchups have been good on Showtime, HBO has shifted into another gear, bringing us highly entertaining 50-50 brutal matchups. And Saturday night was no different. Miguel Berchtold improved to 31-1 with 28 knockouts when he took the title away from former super featherweight champ Francisco Vargas, who loses the first time in his career. Francisco Vargas always always in brutal matchups. Vargas drops to 23 wins, one loss, and a couple of draws. Seventh round stoppage in Indio, California, 2 minutes and 19 seconds. What a fight this was. Berchtold looked like a younger, faster version, stayed in there, had never gone past the fifth round, from what I understand, and really put it to Vargas, who listen, last year his fight with Orlando Salido, who was in attendance, was a brutal matchup and got Fighter of the Year award by many, and he comes right back in. And, you know, a fighter like Vargas, I think he needs to take some time away from the ring, Sal, and be evaluated. This guy is just in just some tough, tough, brutal fights, and his fight and loss to Berchtold was no difference on Saturday night. If you guys didn't get to see it, go punch it up. It was basically, 11 rounds of brutality finally ending at 2 minutes and 19 seconds of the 11th round. Just nonstop from the opening bell until the stoppage. Great, great fight and a humongous win for Berchtold. They're talking about possibly matchups with Lomachenko next. What's your thoughts on that?
That's incredible. You know, we thought, you and I had our feast our eyes on a great competition, great Showtime card, and Dax kept saying in the chat room that we missed an incredible display of boxing and fights on HBO. And I'm saying to myself, well, how much better could it have been than Showtime? But boy, I'll tell you, these guys, what they did the other night was incredible. And I think that Vargas should get evaluated at this point, maybe, and see. And you know, you take too many ring battles, you're going to definitely get the old brain knocked around a little bit, and you got to be careful. Maybe take a little break or just see and how strong and how intact your head is. And so I think that every fighter should be concerned about that. If they have all these wars, they're going to pay for it later.
Yeah, no doubt. And the co-main event was almost as equally as brutal. When Takashi Miura won a 12th-round stoppage over Mickey Roman, running out of gas himself. Miura was huffing and puffing. But from the 7th round, they were like, are you okay? Can you continue? Can you keep going? His corner was saying to him. And he, you know, really poured it on, trying to end it. But, kudos to Mickey Roman hanging in there until finally the 12th round put Mickey Roman on his back. He tried to get up, but it was a typical case where he mentally wanted to get up and his body said, no, you stay the F down. And at the end, Miura improved to 31 wins, 3 losses, and a couple of draws. And Mickey Roman drops to 56-12 with 43 knockouts. It was an elimination fight in the super featherweight division. So maybe Berchtold gets a chance to fight Mirara, but they were mentioning Connor. I'm sorry, they were mentioning Lomachenko as well. I also wanted to mention it was some other fights, but the big ones here. I also wanted to mention Brandon Cook improved to 18-0 when he scored a knockout in the final seconds of the 7th round. Over previously unbeaten Stephen Butler. This was a matchup between the Quebec province in Canada and the Ontario province, because we had these two guys going at it representing each province. And you know, Butler really had the fans going for him. It was a great fight. Cook won the fight. It was waved off. The corner and team of Stephen Butler all did not dispute the stoppage. As a matter of fact, interviews afterwards, they all said, "We appreciate the stoppage. You don't want to ruin a talent like Stephen Butler." But the fans thought otherwise, Sal, because there was a lot of negative. Bottom line is big fights broke out. Things were thrown, bottles of booze and chairs and everything else. And I watched some footage of the melee after the fight. I watched the fight too, but I watched some specific footage. And, you know, my big question was, where the hell was the security? I mean, there was security. I saw some footage of one security guy basically roughing guys up. I mean, it was like, you know, a bouncer that likes to fight and just picks fights. I mean, I saw no, I didn't see any order here. You know, there was different fights all breaking out. And security seemingly not having a handle on it. You know, if you're going to have 5,000 people in attendance, which there was, and it's a rivalry, which it was, and you're handing out flags of your province to promote each other, which they did, you know, I mean, beef up the security a little bit. I mean, these guys were fighting each other. Fights. There were more fights breaking out in the audience than there was scheduled inside the ring. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I just reflect back to some of your earlier shows and comments when we were saying what happened to the good old days of the rivalries, whether it's the ethnic groups or the Bronx versus the Manhattan or the Queens. I guess the Providence or the Canadian people take what you say very serious.
Well, I mean, it was stupid, really. I mean, they should.
I know what you're saying, but yeah, I think security's got to be on the top. I mean, you have a emotionally charged group like that you have to be able to contain emotions and not let them infringe upon others that are trying to enjoy a fight.
Yeah,
well, rise to that level.
Well, you know, if you're a fan and you want to go watch a fight, you know, granted, you know, boxing does have a tendency to get everybody's juices going and, you know, have alcohol mixed in. Everybody gets the beer muscles. But, you know, the truth of the matter is you should be able to want to go to an event like this and not worry about, you know, having some trouble yourself. But anyway.
You probably have the fans getting ready for fights, their own preparation, but they're getting ready that night.
Well listen, every time you go to a fight, Sal, you see people standing up, duplicating what they would be doing, throwing jabs in the air and stuff, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, when you start, you know, everybody should be allowed to cheer who they want to cheer for and not have to worry about, you know, a bottle coming at you. I mean, there was a guy that was taken to the hospital because a vodka bottle hit him right in the head. And Brandon Cook got hit with a flying chair, you know, in the ring, by the way.
Okay, no. So. Yeah, throwing object should be definitely, you should be fined for that or in jail for that.
Well, what they do at some of these football games, American football games, if they catch you throwing some, they ban you from that stadium for life, you know. But
well, they should maybe think about doing it. I mean, that's very harmful. That's very that could be devastating to somebody. You hit him in the head with a beer bottle. Forget about
this
it.
This was a vodka. This was a vodka bottle.
Well, that's even heavier.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, using 16-ounce bar gloves or 8-ounce.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, if it was just thrown at random, but if somebody, you know, aimed and hit this guy, you know, sign him up for the archery team. But anyway, we got a couple of emails. This first one's from my man Coach. He says, I was talking with some guys about the Frampton-Santa Cruz rematch, and the subject of a boxers union came up, and putting aside Congressman Pacquiao's call to kill all the drug dealers, it reminded me that his Philippines House Bill 59, or Philippine Boxer Welfare Act of 2013 comes up for a vote soon. He said, should the Pacquiao written bill pass and become a law. It separates boxing from the Philippines Games and Amusements Board, recommending the development of a six-member board headed by a chairman, including individuals from the private sector and a nominee from the health department, while leaving boxing Klingon promoters, managers, and matchmakers out of the loop because of the obvious conflicts of interest issues. As it's being set up to mainly attend the needs of the destitute and ailing retired professional boxers, Pacquiao's proposed bill, which is called the PBC, which is not to be confused with Al Haymon's Premier Boxing Champions, the commission would be given an annual budget of approximately $3 million U.S. dollars. It's unclear if Pacquiao has recused or disqualifies himself. The eight-time six-division world champion, Bill 59, suggests a monthly pension of about $400 a month for former Filipino pro boxing and world champions recognized by the WBA, WBC, WBO, and IBF, which excludes former Filipino world champions of other governing bodies like the WBF, WBU, and IBO. It would also serve fighters death benefits of approximately $1,000 to cover funeral services, a retirement pension of about $300 a month for boxers who won international competitions. In conjunction with the proposed pension, it would also grant indigent retired fighters a source of help while overseeing and issuing the renewing of boxing licenses, clearing fighters for overseas fights, while addressing the concerns of trainers, cutmen, coaches, and other stakeholders. Although it faces all possible fraudulent activities encountered by other commissions or unions, Pacquiao's plans to develop a trust fund, drawing monies from fees, fines, and both governmental and private grants for the assistance to fighters and upgrading the boxing training facilities in the Philippines. On the medical side, it produces a mandatory rest period not less than 90 days based on the extent of the damage generated by a knockout or TKO. Philippine former WBC flyweight and WBO bantamweight champion Jerry Penalusa has been recommended to take a seat on the PBC board because of his experience as a fighter as well as overall success after the sport of boxing. The PBC will also consider bringing and holding more major boxing events to the Philippines, including what could be a possible conflict of interest, a Manny Pacquiao fight at the 55,000-seat Philippine arena in November. While not addressing fighters' tax problems, it's a start and appearing to need some fine tuning. I'd like to know your guys' thoughts. Also, on an amusing side note, what's your thoughts on the chances of Money Mayweather going to the Philippines for a Pacquiao rematch? He says, remember to hands up and protect yourself at all times. My initial thoughts about Floyd going to the Philippines, he'll never leave Vegas, which is why I was talking about Floyd's potential 50th win and the fact that Conor McGregor is licensed in the state of California. I doubt Floyd will ever go to California to fight him. But then again, it is a pretty easy fight for Floyd. It sounds great, but my initial thoughts off the top of my head, Coach, and thanks for this email.
Great,
the first thing that comes to mind, Sal, is, you know, it clearly states this was for former major champions. All the fighters who never won a world title, thus never making a potential large payday, the fighters that mostly need it, they're excluded. You know, I think that if you're going to put together, this is very similar to what the WBC put together for its Retired Boxers Foundation. But the fighters that never made it to a world title, never made those so-called big paydays, they're the ones that are suffering today, Sal. The guys that have taken a beating, the guys that were the gateways so other fighters can become big names or major world champions, those are the guys that most likely don't have a solid job, don't have their faculties 100%. I mean, what do we do for those guys? I mean, listen, if you're going to do a pension and you're going to make it for only fighters that have won a world title, that's kind of counterproductive, because assuming that a fighter makes a world title, wins a world title, they should be able to make some money. Now, whether they piss that money away or not, that's neither here nor there. But what do we do to protect all those other fighters, Sal, that could possibly need some help?
Well, you hit it on the head. I think you know, my hat's off to the government for trying to come up with something and being proactive. I think it's a step in the right direction, but like you said, a lot of these champions evolve from fighting a lot of opponents that are professional opponents, that are professional punching bags. I don't mean punching bags, but they do absorb a lot of punishment, and they are the ones that can't hold down a job, that can't find a job, that are losing their faculties, that are losing their motor skills, and you know, they're dying young, and they're leaving families, and they're doing things. I mean, poor Jerry Quarry and Mike Quarry. I mean, look at them. They were, I think, in diapers and wheelchairs and dead before 50, or just in the mid 50s. You know, and they took a lot of punches in the ring, and I think what you and I said, more some fighters are more predisposed to the trauma of getting hit in the head than others. You take a guy like Jake LaMotta. I mean, Jake was hit with sledgehammers. He's in his 90s and he's still fine. You know, if you took a guy like the Quarry brothers, like the genetic makeup, whatever it could have been, and they had a very short life, and not the Quarry the last couple of years. And so, yeah, I would appreciate someone being proactive trying to look at what you could do to solve this security issue for people of all levels of boxing. If you fight and you're an opponent, you have a couple losses, you run a couple losses, you're going to probably look for something else and get out of the game. But if you're in there making a career out of fighting and trying to be a champion and wind up becoming an opponent and then a journeyman and then everything else, you know, you're gonna suffer years later. You could, the odds are. And it's those people, including the champions, that should have some type of pension and should have some type of policy in mind for them. But then again, you're going to have to look at all the legalities and all the that could happen with this. I mean, we had the biggest, our own federal government with Social Security. That was nothing more than a Ponzi scheme or so. It still is today. There's no money waiting to be taken out. The money that you are paying into is funding the people that are taking it out right now. So well, it's got to be monitored. It's got to be taken care of. It's got to be in trusted well, the people that can do the job.
Yeah, but the easiest way, the not to get off topic, but the mistake that Social Security made was that they started borrowing. The government was borrowing that money to do other things. Because if everybody put in their cut,
well, you're right,
and then it was subjected to them unless they passed away or whatever, and then the rest of that money gets put into a pot or gets distributed or whatever, then we wouldn't be having this discussion. We wouldn't worry about a large population that needs to draw from Social Security versus the workforce not being able to fund it. It should have already been funded by the people that worked it. You know, I mean,
You're exactly right. And that's the whole thing. I mean, that was my background years ago was financial services. I don't want to mention the companies I work for, but that's it. And Social Security, when it evolved, maybe the average lifespan was 65. So when you got it, you weren't expected to live too long. Now we're living to be 80, 90, and they're depleting it. And also the baby boomers, they were the glut. And they were paying taxes and Social Security when it was three people in the workforce for every one retiring. Well, that's all reversed now. It's one person in the workforce for every three retiring.
Yeah, but Sal,
fall apart.
But Sal, that baby boomer, when there's a gazillion people working, they all put in for it. What happened to all that money that now they won't get? You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is the government fucking stole it. That's what. But anyway, we could do a whole show over that. But the only time that it would have been a problem is in the beginning when the people that started becoming eligible for it had not put in for it yet. And that should have been X amount of money should have been kicked into that fund from the government to start it. Then from that point forward, everybody putting in that was, you know, starting out in the workforce, let's say in their 20s, would have been able to fund their own you know, retirement and Social Security if they wouldn't have spent it, you know. But anyway, one last email, and Dax Khan is scheduled to come on here in about 5 minutes. This one's from Joel. He says, hey, Billy C., since the focus on the post-fight show was the Showtime card, can you and Sal give us your review on the Vargas-Burchelt card? It seemed like it was the better card over Showtime, but I wanted your opinion. Did you also happen to see the mayhem after the Butler-Cook main event in Montreal? Butler scored a shocking seventh-round stoppage over the hometown guy, Stephen Butler. There were several fights in the crowd, and Cook was hit with a metal bucket after being victorious. He says, thank you very much for the post-fight shows this year. I look forward to every one of them and enjoy tuning in after the big cards. The Billy C. Show has bested Showtime and HBO already for 2017 in Joel's eyes, just on the post-fight shows alone. Thanks, Billy C. and Sal. Well, thank you for the email, Joel.
Thank you, Joel.
We talked a little bit. I thought that, you know, watching the Carl Frampton Leo Santa Cruz fight on Saturday on Showtime, I was like, oh, this is a great fight. It wasn't as action-packed, I thought, as the first fight, at least the first half of the Santa Cruz-Carl Frampton fight rematch. But it certainly turned into a great fight, and I loved every minute of it, including the undercard and the devastating knockout by Mikey Garcia. Then when I watched the HBO fight, I was like, oh, my God, what a terrific fight. So both of them, I mean, they were just brutal. And, you know, as I said earlier in the show, Joel, my opinion of both events, you know, not to take anything away from the fights, because all four fights that we saw were good ones. I give my personal nod to HBO because, and don't get me wrong, I will admit I can't stand Mauro Ranallo on Showtime. To me, he ruins the fight cards. But thanks to him, I never listened to them with the sound. So I'm able to watch the Showtime events without the stupid comments from Ranallo and even Paulie Malignaggi, who knows his shit but says the stupidest things sometimes. And my man Al Bernstein has turned into a corporate guy, and there's no reason for me to listen to them. When I listen to HBO, Lampley and Max Kellerman are the same as they always are, and Roy Jones Jr., his time has come and gone. I really don't see why they keep him around. But with that said, my edge goes to HBO. I thought that they were more evenly matched, even though you can't get more evenly matched than Frampton Santa Cruz. I just thought that for entertainment value, the HBO card was way better. And yes, I have to admit, I like the toe-to-toe style fighting, because if somebody's going to drop me an email and tell me that Floyd Mayweather, his style is the example of the sweet science, I'll throw up again, because it's not. Rigondeaux is sweet science, or Slandy Lara is sweet science. Lomachenko is the best form of the sweet science you can ever have. Floyd Mayweather, although he's great defensively, he's a runner. He runs at the other end of the ring, so not only can his opponent not hit him, he can't hit his opponent either. That's not the sweet science. But I give the HBO card my nod. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, from the highlights and from things, I didn't see every minute of the HBO card, but I will tell you what. It was a great, great month of boxing, and I give both Showtime and HBO kudos for giving us those fights for the month of January. Now, can you imagine? We have 11 more months to go. Let's see what we can do. And but I think the first month of the year has started off pretty darn good, Billy C., with giving us some damn good fights.
And February is going to be pretty decent too. As a matter of fact, this Thursday, I like the matchup between Sammy Vasquez Jr. and Luis Collazo. I will be watching it Thursday night, and we'll be chatting about that fight on Friday morning.
Yeah.
But right now, joining us with his thoughts on both cards, and of course, Floyd Mayweather picking Conor McGregor most likely for his 50th win. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of all ages, Dax Khan joins us. What's up, Dax?
Yeah, good morning. Slow getting started this morning.
You were slow getting started?
I was. I don't know what it is. It's just, you know, I don't want to call it like the, you know, the Monday blues, but I don't know. I just, the slow getting started this morning.
Yeah, I can't.
And I've been up since like 4 o'clock, but, you know, it's been like dragging.
Yeah, I was a little under the weather this weekend, and I hear what you're saying. And I did get a good night's sleep last night, but I still felt a little under the weather. But first and foremost,
I'm glad to hear that, guys. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're in the sunshine states, and we're not.
I feel great every day.
Of course you do. That's what happens when you see sunshine, ocean, and palm trees. And when we look out our windows, we see snow and, you know, birds looking at us like, hey, can you throw me a seed or two? Come on, you know. But anyway, so what's your thoughts on the fights this weekend, Dax?
Well, first, just to recap on the showtime, I just wanted to clear something up that spoke about on the post-fight show that I don't know if maybe I didn't express it well or you guys just didn't understand, because after I got off the phone, both you and Sal had seemed to contradict kind of what I had said about the Mikey Garcia and the Dejan Zupkin fight. Is, you know, like I said last Monday, that, you know, any fighter, whether or not it's Mikey Garcia or anybody else, when you take a two-year layoff, because you're not happy with your promoter for whatever the reason, and you take a break for that long, other than a genuine injury that's keeping you out of the ring, when you return after 2 years and you fight a C-level opponent, and no, there is no valid reason why you should be thrust into a title opportunity, other than the fact that you're generating money for somebody. We've seen this with Tyson Fury. He became the lineal heavyweight champion. He's done nothing since. Andre Ward, a two-year layoff, and they stated he fights an Alexander Brand. He goes, and then he defeats Kovalev, and what to do? He talks about retirement. You know, Mikey Garcia did not earn the right to fight for a title, irregardless of the fact that he was a genuine champion. I've heard people say it about Andre Ward and other fighters, and just because you like fighter A, it can't be okay because you don't like fighter B. That's what's wrong with boxing today, and that's what frustrated me about that fight. It was a great win. You know, why bother having rankings at all? That's why there's so many title belts out there available, because you know what? If one promoter and one sanctioning body won't cater to fighter A, sanctioning body B will cater to that guy, and that's why fans are so confused. Whether or not Mikey Garcia does afterwards, you know, I'm not saying he's not going to be an active champion, he's not going to step back into the ring, but you know, you just don't take 2 years off because you're not happy with the way things are going with your promoter, and then jump back in and get a title opportunity. That's not fair, especially as you guys were just speaking in terms of fighters who work hard, they don't make these paydays, and they're not given the type of things that they should to help compensate themselves. What about these guys that are out there working hard, and they're not getting these opportunities, and you know what? They're not being compensated for their time, and then you have somebody coming back because they have a little bit of a name, and they're getting a world title shot and a big payday. That's not fair.
No, I can't argue that. I think, and I've said it many, many times, that and exactly in those words, where you got young fighters that are going through the motions, training real hard, holding two jobs to support their families, and still making it to the gym, and they don't have the backing, and they're not getting the opportunity. Where you get somebody that's got some money behind them, they're fighting cupcakes, and next thing you know, they're fighting for a world title. I agree with that. My point was that he was a champion. I get your point. He shouldn't have even had the opportunity because he didn't fight his way back into contendership. But it is what it is. Unfortunately, that's the way boxing is today. And that's one of the reasons, Dax, that I've talked to you many, many times off the air of why it's hard for me to stay into it. But anyway.
Absolutely. And it's not taking anything away from the win because it was a sensational knockout. But, you know, onto HBO. Now, that right there, you know, that was amazing. Those fights in the main and co-main event are the type of fights, Bill, Sal, that, you know something, in 10 years, 20 years, people will look back on them, and they're going to rank up there with the Arturo Gaddis and the Mickey Wards. They're going to rank up there with the Vasquez and Marquez. You know, those were just absolute wars. They're also the type of fights that take years off of a fighter's life, in ring years I'm talking about, you know, that... But, you know, the heart, and, you know, it was, they were skilled wars. You know, Takashi Miura, you know, going in there in that sixth round, his corner's asking him, are you sure you can win? You know, the guy's there, he's, but he wasn't going to be dejected, you know. He went out there, and Miguel Roman, you know, irregardless of the fact he lost, you know something, that guy should hold his head up because he put on one hell of a performance, and, you know, those guys really right there, you know, you have to applaud them because they earned their money that night. Am I right or wrong? I mean, did they not earn their money and then some?
100%. And I agree with you. The only problem with people remembering these great fights, and I wish that you could put them in a vault and force fans to watch them, is if you don't have something else to add to the memory, like a rematch or a trilogy, so to speak, like the fight you mentioned earlier, you know, the Gotti Wards and the Vasquez Marquez matchups. You know, if they don't fight again, people have a tendency to forget them. You know, Sal made a comment earlier about, oh, we kicked off the year really well. Now, should we have a couple of good fights in over the next, 11 months? You know, how do you keep these kinds of fights in your memory banks? You know, I mean, it's easy to forget. There's so many of fights from the 80s and previous that were great, great fights that we don't even talk about anymore, you know, and that's unfortunately the nature of the biz.
Absolutely, you know, and you know, a lot of these great fights that we speak about, dedicated boxing fans speak about, are the ones in lower weight classes. You know, up until there was a time when all the weight classes were recognized, and then for quite a few years, maybe almost two decades, anything below welterweight was unrecognized, and that's where a lot of these great fights were happening. You know, as far as the Francisco Vargas and Miguel Burchell. These guys landed 50% of their power punches up into the stoppage each. I mean, 50% of their power punches. It wasn't a reckless war. It was skilled infighting. To be able to go in there and go to war like that and land that high of a connect rate and throw the amount of punches that they did, you have to be skilled. I mean, there was head movement. There was defense in there. Or else, if you don't have defense, you're not going to stand there toe-to-toe for 11 rounds. I don't care how great of a chin you have. But, you know, Vargas, you know, he had too many wars. He didn't take enough time off before this Lito fight. That's taking nothing away from Miguel Burchell, who I think, you know, he solidified himself. You know, we now have a new star in that division at 25 years old. He's only going to improve. He learned a lot in that fight. There were a few times where he looked a little bit confused at the fact that he couldn't get Vargas out of there. But you know something, that's what happens when you go in there against a seasoned pro like Vargas. You know, we talk about all the time, Bill, Sal, everybody in networks and stuff and fans talk about how, you know, the Mexican-Puerto Rico rivalry is so legendary and how tough these fighters are. But you know something, the Japanese fighters are tough as anybody or any in the business of anywhere in the world, and you know, they have had some great rivalries with the Puerto Ricans and Mexicans over the years. You know, people who remember, you know, Guts Ishimatsu, the lightweight, then you had guys like, you know, Fighting Harada, Hiroshi Kobashi, Jiro Watanabe. You know, these guys, you know, they made their careers and their best fights were against Latin opponents. But as you stated, Bill, they're also the type of guys that, because of their location, because of the weight class, and because they didn't have, like, really these trilogies and these big promoters, a lot of their fights are forgotten. But if people ever had the opportunity to look back into that vault, they would really understand, you know, how good these guys are.
No, I agree with you 100%. 100%. And Francisco Vargas, like Sal and I were talking about earlier, he needs to be checked out. He's been in some wars. That's his style. I know it's, you know, the fans love it and stuff. But, you know, there comes a time in a boxer's career where, you know, you should be evaluated. And one of the things I have said, and I know, Dax, you know, I've said this for years, and I brought it up with the ABC as well as Larry Hazard, etc. You know, if they were, this is where my idea of forcing a fighter before you issue him a professional boxing license, so before you give him his federal ID, that he has to just get a brain scan for the record. Because in the event that Francisco Vargas never had a brain scan, or even if he had one after a brutal fight, it would be a good way to evaluate him now. Take a look at that brain scan before he started his first professional fight, and compare it with one that you know, you take today, and see if there's any underlying potential damage that's being done to discuss with this guy for his future. Because let's face it, we all love that fight, Dax, but man, he's only human, and he took a lot of shots. I'm not saying that his opponent didn't take any shots, but because he certainly did. But Francisco Vargas, after his last three fights, all wars, I don't know, man. I'd be concerned if I was part of his team.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, we use Timothy Bradley in his fight against Ruslan Provokanov. You know, Timothy Bradley was open when he shared, and a lot of guys wouldn't do that. You know, you have to give Timothy Bradley credit, and I think he only got away with this because of the level of fighter he is, where he said, you know, I slurred my words for well over a month after that fight. You know, the brain is only meant to take so much punishment. That is why, you know, when people, if they suffer some sort of brain injury, or in exactly why something, as you stated, should be implemented, is so important, that, you know, you're able to look at the changes. You know, when somebody has a surgery on their head, or whether even any other part of their body, whether or not, you know, you break an arm and you get a pin put in there, you know, they take images before and then later on, in case anything should ever happen, or if they're just checking up, you know, to see the progress and make sure nothing has changed, they compare these new images to the old images, and that's exactly what they need to do with the brain. You know, they have a special type of MRI that is meant just for concussions, and this type of MRI, what it does is it actually focuses on to the gray matter, and that is the part that needs to be paid attention to the most in all of sports, especially boxing, when you're continuously hitting to the head, so you can see if the brain matter is starting to separate. And if the brain matter is starting to separate or degenerate due to the constant blows to the head, that will let the medical professionals know, listen, this is what's going on, and depending on where the brain matter is starting to show that damage, is able for them to say, you know what, in 5 years, you're going to have this problem. If this continues and this pattern continues in, you know, 10 years, you're going to have this problem, whether or not it's a speech problem, a memory problem, an ability, you know, to function your limbs and your legs and stuff. So that is something that should happen just for the sake of, you know, these guys' longevity. Not only that, you know something, money, it's expensive, you know. You have a health plan. Everybody who has a health plan, you know, you get something from your doctors that says, you know, they offer these bonuses for preventative, which means, you know, if you go to your doctor every year and you get a checkup, you know, that tells them, you know, you're kind of cutting stuff off at the pass and you're saving the health plan money. Same thing can happen there. You know, they save a lot of money, you know, so kind of people shoot themselves in the foot. I don't understand. Now, with that being said, I know I just ran on, this weekend, Jonathan Barrios and Lee Selby, that fight was canceled. And because of Barrios didn't pass the medical requirements, you know, the rumor was because of his hepatitis C. Now, I have a copy of that medical report that Jonathan Barrios tested negative. What is the legitimate reason why that fight didn't take place? Can you answer that to me?
I can't answer that to you. And what pissed me off about that is that, you know, being a former promoter and being a guy that's involved in the sport, you know, behind the scenes as well, you know, just for everybody out there, these guys know what the medical requirements are long time prior to a weigh-in. And, you know, the commission knew that they didn't have the right stuff. They could have canceled this fight. They could have given Team Barrios X amount of time to come up with the documentation that he needed. They did not have to wait until the day before. So that blame should be spread, I think.
Yeah, on the 27th, they took that at the 27th. Matter of fact, in the afternoon, you know, they took that at military time, 1746. They received it at 1808, and that was Pacific time, you know. So, and then they faxed that over on the day of the fight at 1:11 p.m. So, you know, there was, you know, this was this last minute, you know. Again, that's one of those things where they shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, but
that,
you know what? Funny. Yeah, but you know what, though, Dax? If you're telling me that the Team Barrios got it to them the day of the fight, then shame on them. Because, you know, commission should, you know, not have to keep that door open until the time of the fight. And another thing, too, which I always do, when I am involved in a boxing event. I will make sure that I have a copy of all the medicals that comes with me, just because, you know how many times a commission will say, oh, we never got it, sorry. Whether you have proof that it was faxed to them or not, you got to have it in your hand. You know, these aren't first-time fighters, you know, that don't know what's going
these
on.
These are world champions.
I know.
Where is the people, whether it's from the commission or from the promoters that are out there, you know, that work for the promoters or, you know, the matchmaker, where are they not telling somebody, listen, make sure all this stuff is in place. Where are they not, you know, on top of these people, making sure, if anything, just for the fact that all the money they're putting out. But remember this, not too long ago now, it was 3-4 months, I think, maybe at the most, Alexander Povetkin and Berman Stavern was canceled the day of the fight because of a failed test. Speaking to somebody the other day, you know, a few years ago, remember, Texas was losing post-fight samples all the time, so these are the issues with the sport. This is just not caring.
No.
That's what this is.
Dax, the word is corruption. That's what it is. And that's why...
Well, I'm trying not to use that word.
I used it.
Since you did, I'm not going to dispute
it. I used
it.
Right. And it's the fighter's responsibility and their team to make sure they have copies. Don't play stupid. Don't play ignorant. Don't complain that the commission lost it or somebody lost it on purpose. Bring it yourself. You know, and as far as the Povetkin-Stavern fight being canceled... An asterisk goes there because anytime something happens over in Russia, come on, I mean, that's a whole nother ballgame. But
it is. It's just all, like I said, you know, this isn't the amateurs. I have thrown amateur cards that were more organized than a lot of these fights. And these cards aren't, you know, minor cards that are thrown inside some high school or something. You know, these are world title events that are internationally televised. So... last thing, a little bit of news. Anthony Joshua is now in the United States. He landed in Baltimore last night. He's going to be at the Deontay Wilder fight, scouting not only the Deontay Wilder, but, of course, promoting the Klitschko fight. And in the female boxing scene, Heather Hardy is now officially going to be on the undercard of Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia.
Good for Heather. Hopefully they'll put her in with somebody that will be a good fight. But Dax, before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on this whole Mayweather-Conor McGregor thing. You know, I guess I was wrong. It does look like it's going to happen. But my concern, you know, is this. You know, Floyd Mayweather is already copywriting 50-0, 50-0, 50-0 in all different ways. And obviously he's going to market that, you know, after the sport, so on and so forth. But here's my concern. Should we really count this as his 50th win as a professional fighter when he fights Conor McGregor, who, granted, has a very successful UFC career, but as a professional boxer has just obtained a boxer's license in the state of California? Therefore, on paper, as a pro boxer, he's a pro debut fighter. Shouldn't he be required to fight a couple of fights at first? I mean, how can we let Floyd Mayweather get a 50th win, a record-breaking, historical win for the sport of boxing, fighting a pro debut fighter?
No, not at all. You know, I don't see how, you know, on paper, sure, everything on paper looks one way, but, you know, in what's behind there, as this thing that we continue to speak about, that, you know, eventually we're going to get done, you know, behind the numbers, it's going to go down as the 50-0, and that's all that's going to matter. And what's going to happen is the current mindset of people that are sold through the media and the hype men, even guys like Al Bernstein, as you stated before, has become a company man, they're going to sell the fact that Conor McGregor is a world champion, but a world MMA champion, and he's an elite fighter who's doing a crossover, and they're going to sell the fact that people like Holly Holm have crossed over into MMA. She was a former elite boxing champion, and she became a world champion over in MMA. So they That's how they're going to sell this on that record.
But here's the difference. Holly Holm fought how many fights before she got in there with Ronda Rousey? You know, that's
right,
the difference.
But it's how you sell it. It's how you sell it. Did you ever hear that old joke about... It's the old joke about a guy who picks up a girl at a bar in a one-night stand, and she tells him, you know, she goes, treat me like a porn star, give me eight and give it to me hard.
What do you keep coming? You're the guy that's like, hey, snake, let's rattle. Last week, I mean, what are
no,
you?
No,
gonna,
no,
are
no.
You
writing ever hear that joke?
I never heard.
No,
I never heard that one. I never heard that one.
Guy picks up a girl at a bar for a one night stand. They get back to a hotel room, and the girl says, "Treat me like a porn star. Give me eight and give it to me hard." So you know what? I slept with her four times. I smacked her in the mouth. You know that doesn't make you a porn star, and you know what? That doesn't mean you got eight. So you know something? It's 50-0. It may be 50-0, but you know what? It doesn't make it a legitimate 50-0.
Yeah. Well, like you said, if they let the fight happen, it'll go down in the record book. They can't. My point is the commission should require Conor McGregor to have a few fights first before they put him in with a 49-0, former multi-division world champion, self-proclaimed top fighter of all time. I mean, listen, any commission that approves that without Conor McGregor fighting a couple of fights, even if they're showcase cupcake fights, I think there has to be an asterisk, you know. Muhammad Ali, when he fought the sumo wrestler, it didn't count on his record as a win, you know. So it was an exhibition, and that's what...
And, you know, it's not just boxing, though. You have to blame the UFC and MMA as well. They're just as bad as boxing. You know, we want to put the blame just on boxing, but you have to put it on them. You know, James Toney went in there against a Hall of Famer and two-division world champion and an elite amateur wrestler in Randy Couture, and he was embarrassed in just a matter of seconds. You know, it happens. They don't care. The money is what matters. It's a sideshow. It really is. It's a sideshow. They might as well, Bill, go around from town to town into the bars and just pick out the toughest guy there, and you know what? We're going to meet in the street tomorrow and just throw some change down, and everybody can call themselves the world champion. You know, that over 200 years ago, that worked back when Tom Molyneux was the champion, you know something, but now they're just doing it on a bigger platform.
Good point. Dax, appreciate your call, and we'll look forward to you Friday because we're going to be watching the Sammy Vasquez, Luis Collazo fight Thursday night, and we'll get your thoughts on that fight Friday morning before we open the phone lines.
All right, everybody, enjoy your day.
Take care, Dax.
Take care, Dax.
You can check out Dax's column up on BillyCBoxing.com. You know, Sal, Mayweather McGregor, if the fight happens, it has to be an exhibition unless they force McGregor into a couple of fights. I mean, I don't see it any other way. What's your final thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you know, you try to establish the credibility of this fight. Other than being entertaining, you have a world champion MMA fighter versus a former world champion professional boxing champion, and it's definitely entertaining to even think about the two of them meeting in a ring. But to do it on a level that's legitimate at this point, I think, as you were saying, that Conor McGregor does need to establish a little credibility in the sport of boxing.
Right. I mean, you know,
I feel it.
There's been many, many fights that were, exhibition that gets put on a record. It gets documented that the fight took place, but next to it, it says exhibition. And if Conor McGregor does not fight another fight before Mayweather, in my opinion, it's an exhibition. And Coach is sitting here.
I think it's a good point, Bill.
Coach is sitting here making Italian jokes. And all I could say is ILM, Italian Lives Matter. Come on, man. Come on. But anyway, on this day, and by the way, programming note, boys and girls, we will not be here on Wednesday. I am going to be involved in a documentary on Tom Molyneux and some other topics, specifically the Irish slave trade of the 1800s. On Wednesday, so that's why I won't be here. But we'll be back on Friday, and we will be talking about the Sammy Vasquez Jr. against Luis Collazo fight, among other things. So make sure you watch that fight and tune it in here on Friday morning. But Sal, on this day, January 30th in 1976, Rodolfo Martinez wins a 15-round decision over Venancy Bocasciora, to retain his WBC bantamweight title, and that took place in Thailand. On this day in 1982, Arturo Freitas wins a 9-round technical decision over Ernesto España to retain his WBA world lightweight title, and that took place in Los Angeles, California.
I remember that fight.
Yeah, that set up the fight with Boom Boom, didn't it?
Yes.
On this day, January 30th in 1982, Wilfred Benitez wins a 15-round decision over Roberto Duran to retain his WBC junior middleweight title, and that took place in Las Vegas. On this day in 1984, Charlie Brown... Charlie Brown wins a 15-round decision over Melvin Paul to win the vacant IBF World Lightweight title. Took place in Atlantic City, New Jersey on this day in 1984. On this day in the year 2000, Freddie Norwood knocks out Takashi Kozumoto in the 9th round to retain his WBA World Featherweight title. Took place in Japan. And finally, on this day, January 30th in 2005, Injin Chai wins a 12-round decision over Tommy Brown to retain his WBC World Featherweight title, and that took place in Seoul, South Korea, on this day, January 30th in 2005. Sal, that concludes our show for today. Any final thoughts, my man?
No, I think we had a good weekend full of fights, and like I said, January proved to be a good month for boxing, and we can only see what happens the next couple of months. And I think February, we're going to be treated to some of the same. So I'm glad about that.
Yep, and we got some big fights, like Dax mentioned. Deontay Wilder fighting another sacrificial lamb. Oh, that's right. That's not a big fight. We got Daniel Jacobs and Triple G coming up. We got Miguel Cotto fight. Oh, that's right. That's a bogus fight. Saul Canelo Alvarez fighting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. That ought to be an interesting fight. And Anthony Joshua against Klitschko. So we got some good fights coming up. We got to weed out the BS ones and enjoy the good ones. But I'll leave everybody with this. Give me your thoughts. Drop me an email, Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Now, I'm looking for all thoughts, whether you're young, whether you're old, like Sal, or whether you're somewhere in between. What's your thoughts? If Floyd Mayweather fights Conor McGregor, and Conor McGregor's first pro fight is against Floyd Mayweather, should we give Floyd the credit for his 50th win? I mean, a guy that pounds his chest and says he's the best ever, which is a complete joke, do we give him a pass at such a sacred record of 50-0 and then retiring, assuming he retires? Is that right? I mean, people have forgotten that Julio Cesar Chavez went 80 fights before losing. Sugar Ray Robinson went, I don't know how many he went, 60-something fights without losing. So many fighters have surpassed the 50-fight win mark, only to eventually lose. How Floyd gets all the accolades, I don't know, unless he stays retired. So drop me an email with your thoughts, Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. That concludes our show for today. Make sure you tune in Friday morning, same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby.
Boom.